This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on WEEI, John Lyon, alongside Tom Carroll. And Tom, for a Sunday afternoon in mid-February, got a lot of stuff on the table.
Yeah, I mean, this is typically one of the slowest times of year for sports, given that the NBA is off and the NHL has, for some reason, lined up their time to be off at the same time as the NBA in recent years. But with the NHL doing four nations instead of an all-star break, it has given us this extra fun thing to talk about, at least here locally, where hockey really matters and a bunch of Bruins are involved. I mean, yeah, 100%. And the Red Sox did something. Wow. What a time.
I know.
It's crazy. So you got the Patriots with all this cap space. Amazing. And you got the Red Sox making moves. There's a lot to discuss here in Boston. I love it.
617-779-7937 is the call line and the text line. Let's go to the phones. William in the car wants to talk All-Star Games. William, welcome into the program. What do you got for us?
Hey. Well, I was just going to ask and or suggest. I know they do in Major League Baseball. Don't they do some kind of Pan American, like what the NHL is doing now?
Well, they have the World Baseball Classic in like what's that? Every March, like every 2 year or 3 year, whatever it is.
They've been inconsistent with it. Yeah. And I think when COVID happened, it kind of threw that thing for a loop. But the World Baseball Classic is a good example of something like Four Nations really getting people interested and involved.
Take a couple of weeks off in the middle of the season. There's plenty of Latin American teams that'll play any Major League Baseball team that'll come down there, you know, or them up here or whatever. But then you'll have a couple of weeks and take the place of the All-Star game.
Yeah, William, thanks for the call.
You can still have the All-Star game, you know. I don't know. You still have the All-Star game and the home run derby and all that good crap. But
yeah, William, thanks for the call. Look, I would trade, by the way, 150-game baseball season for a week or two of that.
Well, so the thing I was going to tell William is there's no way the baseball is ever going to take a two-week break in the middle of their season for this. Just the way that pitchers work with their arms, it's just not going to happen.
That last World Baseball Classic when you had Ohtani versus Trout on the mound,
it was amazing.
That was very similar to what we saw last night.
Electric.
That was, if I remember right, they did that in like March. Didn't they start spring training early?
That's what it is. So that's the way they do it. And if they can get more consistent with that, it should be something that they do more frequently, and it gets people interested leading into the season. And I think something like 60 million people in Japan watched that game, or something. It might even be more.
I wouldn't even mind, though, to the caller's point, where like every 3 or 4 years, instead of playing the baseball All-Star game, you do like an international exhibition on that day. Like, so instead of the All-Star game, you have like USA versus the world or something like that, you know, or you could, I don't know, Eastern versus Western Hemisphere, because you have so many great players in Asia, so many great players in Latin America. You could do something like that. Like, I wouldn't even mind if you did something like, again, just one game, but every 3 or 4 years. Because, like I said, what we saw in that World Baseball Classic with Ohtani versus Trout, and really not just that, the whole tournament, very similar to what we saw with the Four Nations last night.
Yeah, and the NBA should 1,000% do a Four Nations-style thing for their All-Star game. And it wouldn't be a tournament, right? Because they already have the in-season tournament. They already got, like, another tournament-y type thing, right?
In-season tournament's so stupid.
Yeah, it's pretty dumb.
Like, but I'd rather them take the All-Star Week and have a mini four-team tournament. And you can say, like, North America versus, you know, Europe versus Asia. Like, just, you know, break it up however you want and have, like, a mini little tournament that way.
I think that would be cool. I think the more likely scenario is doing something like Team USA versus Team World.
Yeah, which I would take.
Which would be amazing.
Or and honestly, North America versus the rest of the world, because then you could get SGA and Tatum on the same team.
There
selfishly.
You go. Yeah,
selfishly.
Yeah, sure.
You could get SGA and Tatum on the same
team. We're not friends with Canada right now in the sports world. So let's.
Yeah, especially after last night.
Absolutely not. Yeah. So the international team would be favored against Team USA.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
It'd be Jokic, Giannis, Luka, like SGA, Wemby. That's teams. Whereas the USA.
Bunch of old guys and Tatum.
You have Tatum, Devin Booker.
And will Steve Kerr even play Tatum?
Right, yeah. Right, yeah. That's a team Jaylen Brown would make, though, right?
Right. I don't even know.
But yeah, because like Curry and LeBron are, you know, LeBron's 40, Curry's what, 36. So that would be, I think you're right. I actually think the international team, if you did a four nation style NBA All Star game where it was USA versus the world, I think the world team would be favored.
Without a doubt.
Even if you did North America versus the rest of the world, you'd still have Jokic and Giannis on the same team. Like, and Luka, that team
and
might.
And Wembanyama.
And what? Like, that team might be favored. Like,
I don't think there's a question in my mind they would be favored.
Yeah, that would be cool. Well, you got a texter from the 781. This is some of the best hockey I've seen in years. I feel the players realize that they can open up a lot of eyes to their sport and bring in a lot of money by playing hard in this tournament. And I think, to your earlier point, Tom, this February time of year where you have no NBA, like the NBA All-Star game, but no NBA games, NFL's over, baseball hasn't started, you have a good tournament right now. And I think this is where the Olympics last summer were huge, like that France-USA basketball final. Well, think about also not just that it was a great game, but the time of year was great for basketball because it was just baseball going on. That was it. Like, I think that's a good point by the 781 texter that having this right now is going to bring a lot of eyeballs to hockey. Like I mentioned, Dylan Larkin. That's a lot of people don't get to see maybe Dylan Larkin as much. Red Wings haven't been good. Now all of a sudden, a lot of people know who didn't know of him or who maybe knew of him, know him a little bit more now.
Yeah, I think a lot of these sports sometimes they're not self-aware enough to realize that they need to take advantage of their lot in land and take advantage of the real estate when they can, right? So I think the NHL is capitalizing on that right now. But, you know, you look at that, let's say, 3-week span in the summer, like the last weekend of July to those first few weeks of August before preseason football starts. That's a time of year that I feel like is so dead in sports that no one has ever really come in and grabbed that. Like, I think all of these leagues need to be smarter about putting really important things during times of year where the NFL isn't just dominating everything. So the NHL is doing a great job right now of finding their lane and capitalizing on it in a huge way.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think it's not just the time of year. It's been great hockey.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not just like the atmosphere last night. We've talked all about that. But the actual game itself, that was a great game. Like a 3-1 game that was 1-1 for a long stretch of that game. Then it was 2-1 for a while. Like, just objectively, take the fact that it was Montreal, Rogers Center, all this stuff out. That was just a great hockey game, too.
Yeah, I think that you could have watched that game as someone that isn't even a hockey fan per se and enjoyed it. The energy was awesome. The fights, the chanting. It was a blast. Yeah. And I would say, like, I'm not a diehard hockey guy, but I was as into that last night as I've been into a hockey game in a really long time.
Yeah. Outside of like the Bruins.
Outside of Bruins postseason
stuff,
runs.
Like, yeah,
and
right.
Bruins games.
Yeah. And you're going to be in the building this week, right?
Yeah.
So that's another thing. Like, you play in Rogers Center, which is a great hockey market. It's Montreal. I mean, we hate them, but it's a great hockey market, right? Then you come to Boston, another great hockey market. Like, that's also really smart by the NHL. Played in a couple different places, like great hockey markets. Because, look, I think Monday night at the TD Garden is going to be off the wall. And I think Thursday night at the TD Garden, the roof might come off the place.
If Canada can get to that game on Thursday, because Team USA will be playing in it, we know that, it will be one of the hardest tickets to get in the city.
I checked last night. You want to know how much it was?
For Thursday without it being Canada?
So it was, last night it was during like the first period. I was like, I'll check it out.
So you were just looking at Monday night tickets?
No, I was looking at Thursday night tickets. Cheapest one was $450.
Yeah,
and that was before the end of, before you even knew for sure the U.S. was going to be
$781.
Yeah, I bet you $781 right now.
That's what I saw last night after the game. It went up by $200 as the game went on. It was crazy.
Yeah. And it makes sense. And if Canada can clinch a spot in that championship game, that'll be one of the hardest non-championship tickets to get in this city in a very long time. Maybe ever.
$781, that's what the prices were for the Celtics-Mavs NBA Finals in that neighborhood. $700-$800 for a balcony seat. I mean, that's what we're talking about. Similar price. Similar, probably, intensity and activity. So, man, that was fun to watch, though.
It was so fun, man. It really was. And you have to hope that something like this, and McAvoy having the game that he had, and a bunch of Bruins being involved in this thing, that it kind of engenders some life into this team as they go towards the trade deadline.
And I know we got to get to break, but that's one other thing I think is important, because you said earlier, and you're right, that a lot of teams and players and leagues are worried about high-intensity All-Star games because they're worried someone's going to get hurt. But the other side of it is, this could jumpstart McAvoy's second half of the season.
Totally.
And he could play great. Like, that hit on McDavid was the key point of the game. He could play great. And I mentioned Dylan Larkin. I mean, he's already got like 23 goals or whatever this year. But it's going to, excuse me, jumpstart his second half of the season. Like, it can have a positive benefit, too. So, all right.
Go get some water.
We do have to get to, and we've talked about this so. The Red Sox did sign Alex Bregman. The Patriots offseason's now getting into full swing. The Celtics are still the best team in the NBA, no matter what the record says at the All-Star break. So we still have a lot of stuff to get to coming up. Before we do that, though, time to trend with Jacob Lassner. Happy day outside. John Lyons onside, Tom Carroll. And it's a crappy day. But I will say, last Sunday, Tom, pretty good day if you're a Patriots fan.
That was fun.
And I say that to say this. If you look at what happened in the Super Bowl, it really came down to one thing, and that's that Eagles' defensive line mauled the Chiefs' offensive line. And that was the Chiefs' offensive line. Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, those are really good players. Joe Tooney, I know he's out of position. He's a good player. And those dudes got dominated. And in a Patriots context, you look at the Patriots' defensive line, I think Christian Barmore is a great player. I know he had the blood clots this year, barely played. But I think fully back and healthy next year, that's a great player. I think Keon White can be a great player. Anthony Jennings is really good against the run. Not a great pass rusher, good against the run. But it feels like the Patriots are missing a piece or two on the defensive line, and it feels like they're missing about three pieces on the offensive line. So when you look at how these teams are built, is the Eagles a model you want the Patriots to follow? This over several years drafting Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, Jordan Davis, and having Jordan Mailata, obviously Lane Johnson's the vet who's been there a long time, but then Dickerson, right, all these guys kind of slowly just build from the inside out.
So when Jalen Carter got drafted by the Eagles, like, you just knew, like, this stinks. Like, why do they get him, too? They already had so many studs on defense.
They got Jordan Davis.
Yeah.
They got Nolan Smith and Jalen Carter in the same draft.
It's crazy.
In the first round of the same draft.
And I know he had, like, the weird thing where he was, like, drag racing or something.
Yeah,
it's like, guys, he's, what, 20, 21 years old? Who cares? This guy is generationally awesome, was awesome in college, was talked about as being like a top five talent,
and the number one player in the draft.
We just let the Eagles get him.
And I remember,
I hate it.
So
now I'm happy they beat the Chiefs, but I hate that it has to be Philadelphia.
Before the Patriots played the Eagles in week one of the 2023 season, KJ and I had a guy on that he knew from Philadelphia who had been a bunch of Eagles practices, obviously, you know, watched all their preseason action. And so we just said, like, hey, how good is this Jalen Carter guy? And he goes, Warren Sapp.
Insane.
And we were sitting there like, not that we didn't believe the guy, but we were like, whoa.
Well, I mean, yeah, you and throw then, Warren Sapp's name out there.
But 2 years in.
Exactly.
He kind of looks like Warren Sapp.
No,
like,
he's trending towards being a Sapp-Donald-level guy of impact from the interior, which you just don't see. So when we see it on the biggest stage against the team that's been the best team in football the last 3 years, it's notable and it needs to be talked about. So when I look at where the Patriots are, and you mentioned it, they have all sorts of holes on that offensive line.
How many guys on that offensive line do you look at and say, that's a good starter next year?
Oh, man.
David Andrews and Mike Onwenu?
That's are it? We sure Andrews
well,
is
back?
Well,
and I think even Andrews, if he's one more year. Like, again, nothing. It's just older player. He missed, was it the 2020 season? He missed with blood clots. Missed last year as well. So he's missed a couple seasons in the last 5 years. Even if he comes back, and then it's, okay, does Cole Strange play center? Like, okay, I'm not against it. But I'm still looking at an offensive line that I have at least three major question marks about, like, Caden Wallace. Could he be a right tackle? Sure, I don't know if I'm betting on that. Left tackle, you don't have anyone. So if you want to build, like, to me, I think when I look at this Patriots offseason, and I know we spent time talking about T. Higgins last hour, even if you sign T. Higgins, the luxury that gives you is you can focus even more with the rest of your resources up front, right?
And like, it almost goes back to, I know earlier we said the Pats can probably afford to bring in two big-name receivers, right? If it's just T. Higgins and then you spend a good bulk of your cap on two awesome offensive linemen, proven commodities on the offensive line, I think a lot of Patriots fans should be really happy with that outcome because, like, they need that.
If you sign, say, Alaric Jackson to a longer-term deal to be your left tackle, and then you say, okay, so at four we'll draft Abdul Carter, and then in the second round we'll draft someone we think can be a right tackle or another offensive, like, all of a sudden, like, okay, like, you're on track, and you have something there. And you look at this Eagles team. Like, Jalen Carter, I think, had one tackle maybe on the stat sheet there in the Super Bowl? He dominated that game.
Yeah, even, like, a casual that knows nothing about football could have watched that game and been like, who is that
guy? He's pushing guys back. And, like, Josh Sweat, 2.5 sacks. Nolan Smith, good game. Like,
and all of that awesome stats and all that front four domination you saw is because of that guy in the middle pushing dudes 5 yards off the ball. I mean, it's what we saw Vince Wilfork do a few times in his prime here in New England, when you never saw his stats look crazy, but his impact was felt and is the reason why that guy is being talked about as a possible Hall of Famer at some point.
You can make the case that a legit defensive tackle that's great against the pass and run is more valuable than that pass rushing defensive end. And, like, you look,
it just opens everything up. Yeah. It's like adding an awesome receiver to an offense. It's going to help every other receiver do their thing.
Yeah, and look at the Cooper DeJean pick six. Like, if the Eagles' pass rush was bad and maybe they had to blitz up, maybe he's not in that position if they had to bring extra rushes. I mean, they were hovering around a 50% pressure rate that whole game, and they didn't blitz at all. Like that, and I know that's kind of an outlier, like, how good their defensive line is, but look at even the Chiefs. Like, Chris Jones and George Karlaftis, those are really good players. Chris Jones is an elite player, and they're in the Super Bowl. Like,
both teams in the Super Bowl have really good offensive lines and really good defensive
lines. And look at the teams that got to even the divisional weekend, right? Like, because the way I look at it, Tom, you get to the Super Bowl, you're one of the elite teams, right? Really, you get to the conference championship game, like, those four teams, that's your elite teams. But if you get to the divisional round, like, those are the eight best teams. Like, you're a great team. Like, the Detroit Lions, best offensive line in the league. Philly, probably number two. The Rams' offensive line, I think, has gotten a lot better. Their defensive line with some of those young guys. They lost Aaron Donald, and they were still good. The Chiefs.
Jared Verse is a stud.
Yeah, the Chiefs, good defensive line, good offensive line. Like, those are the teams in the divisional round. Like, even the Texans, their offensive line faltered. It's one of the reasons they lost.
So we talked about free agency being something where the Patriots need to go out and spend that $123 million. And you and I both agree, a lot of it needs to be on that offensive line and in that receiver room. Do you look to the draft as being the spot where they can really bolster the defensive line where, as you mentioned at the beginning of the segment, there are pieces there, and Barmore is a stud when he's healthy. He had a bad year. He had an inconsistent year because of the blood clots. But if he comes back healthy and you can somehow get Mason Graham at number four out of Michigan, who I think is an absolute stud, you put those two guys in the middle of your defense and it's going to just open everything up for the rest of that side of the ball.
Yeah, and I think when you look at how the Eagles have built, like, Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis are draft picks. Nolan Smith is a draft pick. Like, Mylott is a draft pick. But they have guys. Mekhi Becton is a free agent project they brought in, played right guard. and he was awesome. Like Zach Bond at linebacker is a free agent. So like they've done a good job like kind of balancing out. And if you look at the Patriots, if you sign a T. Higgins, and then let's say you sign a Puna Ford out of the Chargers to play defensive tackle, then all of a sudden you know, hey, we could just take an offensive lineman. Like you cut it. You want to
so
go
that,
into
is
the
that
draft.
What you in what, an ideal world? What do you want
in
to
an
see
ideal
the
world,
do this offseason, free agency and draft combined? Like, yeah. And I, look, ideal world, you want them to get everybody, but like realistic ideal scenario.
The realistic
for the
ideal
Patriots.
World. I like that. The realistic ideal world, right? T. Higgins, Alaric Jackson, Puna Ford in free agency, and that allows you to go into the first round of the draft and either take Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter at four, or trade down, stay at ideal. I honestly want them to trade
so
down.
So you think both those guys will be at four?
One of them, I think, will be at four. But I think what I want them to do, honestly, is trade down, stay in the top 10, and then be in a position where they can take the best player available. So if they're there at eight, and there's a guy, you know, if it's who's the edge rusher out of Marshall Green or whatever, like take him. Or take Tet McMillan or whoever. Like, I just want them to be in a position where I want them to take a tackle in round one, but they don't have to take a tackle in round one. I think that's what you want going into the draft. And then that second round pick, you can use that to either just take best player available, or that's the pick you can sit there and say, we'll trade that for DK Metcalf. You know, so, like that in a fourth or something, or that in a fifth.
Yeah, so I'm with you. I like that plan. The thing that kind of has bothered me in the last few weeks, because I was always of the mind, I don't care where you're picking, you got to pick an offensive lineman. They need it, right? And we've talked about it nonstop almost since this show started. But then they were in position to pick number one overall, right? And then I was like, okay, now you got to go and get Travis Hunter because he's the guy that's generational, both sides of the ball, yada, yada. I think he's going to play receiver in the NFL. That's a different topic for a different day. But now that they're picking at four, and now that I've heard Dante Scarnecchia tell the Globe that he wouldn't draft an offensive lineman, and he's, you know, made an entire career bolstering offensive lines. Now, maybe that's him just being who he is, thinking you can coach up anyone to be awesome, right? But is that also him saying, I've looked at this crop and none of those guys are worthy? And who's going to know better than Dante freaking Scarnecchia that these offensive linemen aren't up to snuff? And I think that's why you look at some of these mock drafts, and I know Scheim had his come out the other day, but some of these guys that are more locked into the draft, like Scheim, they have guys like Kelvin Banks and Will Campbell lower in their mocks than they did before the college football season. So I think as time has gone on, and look, it's still early in this draft process.
Still going to measure Will Campbell's arms.
Right. Yeah. So there's a lot of time here for us to have this same conversation probably 90 times. But I've now kind of changed my mind on where I sit when it comes to the offensive line in the first round, given what some of these smart guys that know more about football than I will ever know, saying that maybe they wouldn't lean that way. So where they sit now, I realistically want them to pick Mason Graham as a defensive lineman coming out of Michigan.
He would come in and be a great player.
He would be really good right away. I was looking at his stats from this season where he was awesome for Michigan. He was a huge part of them.
Dominated that Ohio State game.
Dominated. Seven tackles in that game, which was a season high for him. And he was a guy from the interior that really helped be the engine for that team, right? I like to compare it to 2009. It's kind of like the, let's call it, the best season we've seen from an interior lineman in college football in our lifetimes with Ndamukong Suh at Nebraska.
Almost beat Texas single-handedly,
so
right?
Good, yeah. That he was a Heisman candidate as a defensive lineman on the interior, not even a pass rusher. In that season, Ndamukong Suh had 52 total tackles in 14 games. Just this season, Mason Graham had 46 tackles in 12 games. So that's
right in
just
that neighborhood.
Easy
right.
Context for you to look at and say, this guy played in two less games and almost had as many tackles and had almost as big an impact as Ndamukong Suh did at Nebraska, who almost won the Heisman. So you bring a guy like that in here on a defense that desperately needs help stopping the run. It was a huge issue for the Patriots in 2024.
It's been an issue for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Especially, well, actually, the last year under Belichick, they were really good. They were like number one in the league in yards per carry. But yeah, since Mayo took off, they were terrible against
awful.
The run last
year. So you put a guy like Graham next to Barmore. You hope Barmore is healthy. And now you're moving in that Eagles direction of those two young studs in the interior of your defense that you can build around and hope your defense thrives all over the place because you're controlling that line of scrimmage and not allowing these offenses to get comfortable. And, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. You saw what Mahomes looked like on Sunday. Without sending a single blitz, the man was running for his life. And that's with an accomplished all-pro level offensive line in front of him.
Yeah, and they were 0-6 on third down in the first half. And we're talking about a Patriots defense last year, what, 25th in the red on third down, 24th in the red zone, near the bottom of the league in points, yards.
Every defensive that. Measurable you can look at for the front seven specifically for the Patriots was bad.
Oh, yeah, and it got worse from the year before. And I think that's one of the attractive things about this year's free agent class. I feel like, and I don't have the research on this specifically, but compared to other years' free agent class, a lot of young guys. Like T. Higgins is 26. Alaric Jackson is 26. Trey Smith is 25. Like Milton Williams, who just we saw dominate the Super Bowl, 25 in his effort. So there's a lot of guys in their mid-20s. It's not a bunch of guys 29, 30, 31. It's a lot of guys in their mid-20s that are free agents. So I think if you're the Patriots, like if you sign a T. Higgins, it's not just this is going to be our guy for 2 years. Like, this could be your top receiver for 4 or 5 years. And if you sign an Alaric Jackson or even a Ronnie Stanley at age 30, that could be your left tackle for 4 or 5 years at least, which then lets you sit there at fourth overall and say, yeah, we'll trade down and take your best player available, or we'll just sit here and take best player available. Like, I'm still a strong proponent of trading down because I think this team is 2 years. Like, if they get it right, they can be a borderline playoff team this season, but they're 2 years away or so from being actually good once again. So I want to accumulate some more assets. I want to stay in the top 10, but if I can trade down in the top 10 and get an extra first next year or a couple seconds, like that's an extra player, an extra couple players that I think can be pretty good players. So like that to me, I'm a big proponent of the trade down, especially if you can answer some of these questions in free agency.
Yeah, and like I talked about earlier, when it comes to what the Patriots should be doing in free agency and having all this cap space, I think that you go out and you get some proven commodities for the offensive line instead of using draft capital and
I think a receiver, that's
develop.
Important too. Because yeah. We've seen that, but it doesn't matter whether it's Bill Belichick, Gerard Mayer, they have not developed young receivers. Like,
no.
They just haven't. So, T. Higgins, you know that dude can come in and play receiver, and he can be really good. Chris Godwin, even, I know he's coming off the injury, but you know, once that guy gets healthy, he can come in and play pretty damn good at receiver. Like, so I think, yeah, I agree. Like, some of those veteran commodities are really valuable for a team that struggled to develop some of them.
100%. And you have the young quarterback on the contract. So don't mess with this. Go get him guys that you know will be good and can be additive to his development from the jump, as opposed to getting guys that you have to worry about developing around him, guys that you don't know if they can be high-level pros. Go and get Ronnie Stanley, and now you've got Drake May's blind side figured out. And go out and get T. Higgins, and now you've given him a number one. And now you're able to maximize what you can get out of May while he's being paid like a rookie. And I'm telling you, man, these teams that had to go out and shell out these mega deals for these quarterbacks, the roster looks dramatically different in the years following. And
it's probably going to happen to the Eagles even.
Some of these quarterbacks are good enough to sustain the team continuing to be really good, but we don't know if May can be that guy yet. We know he's going to get paid. He's going to get paid here.
Yeah, unless he just
unless
has
he gets hurt, or
Mac Jones level fall off.
He's
of going to
get
yeah.
paid. Do we know if he can be the guy that can elevate everyone around him once it's not a room full of guys that are super talented? We just don't know that yet. So let's go and surround him with proven talent while they can afford to do it.
617-779-7937. We're talking Patriots. We're talking Alex Bregman. We're talking Four Nations. We're talking NBA. We're pretty much talking about everything except for producer Jacob's bad jersey that he's wearing today. Stick with us here on WEEI. We've got a lot to get to coming up, including your texts and calls. Back here on WEEI. John Lyons alongside Tom Carroll in his really cool Four Nations hat, by the way.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of this one.
Yeah, where'd you get that?
I got it at the Garden. Yeah, it's pretty sick. It was like $30. I was down at the Garden today. I thought it'd be more. Given
honestly, for a Four Nations, especially after last night.
Yeah, at the Pro Shop.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I was down there earlier before the show picking up my credential for the week to go to all the morning skates and the games. And while I was there, I was like, I'm going to head over to the Pro Shop and cop the hat. Figured I'd throw it on for the show. I was just so fired up from last night. I was like, I got
it. So I think I'm going to say this publicly to put the pressure on you.
Sure.
Either Monday night or Thursday, you're going to have to go in and get me one of those at the Pro Shop. I'll give you the money, but I see, I don't want to pay shipping costs.
Okay.
I don't want to drive in myself. You're already going to be there. So now it's on air. The people have heard it. It's going to be saved and archived.
Venmo.
So, yeah. I actually don't have Venmo because
Well,
I'm an old guy.
What are we doing?
Even though I think I'm your... You know what my thing is with Venmo? And I know we're getting off track here, but I have this weird paranoia that someday, could be tomorrow, could be 25 years from now, Venmo is going to get hacked and people are going to lose all their money out of Venmo.
You're not
and
wrong. I'm like, going to be the guy. Be hacked, but...
Yeah, I'm going to be the guy that's like, nope, I got my money.
You're going to be like the only guy
the
in the
only
world
guy
that
with
still
money.
Has his money.
I know. Even like my family has Venmo. My friends have Venmo. My coworkers have they're like, hey, you know, let's pick up this tab. Just Venmo me. I'm like, I'll write you a check.
Oh, my
God. I'll give you cash.
You're that guy.
Oh, I swear to God. Like my buddy... We went to Atlanta for his bachelor party in October. Great city, by the way. Been twice. Love Atlanta. And everybody's Venmoing him for, like, the Airbnb and for all this and that. And I just handed him a check. And he actually was like, well, I'm glad you gave me that check in a way because I got all these random Venmos and at least I knew what your money was for. And I was like, yeah. So, So it's on air now. Jacob, save that, right? Like, he's going to get me one of those hats at the Pro Shop.
It's all
saved.
Right,
we'll make it happen.
And actually, you get Jacob one, too, if he changes his hockey sweater. Before the end of the show.
I'm going to need some cash here, boys.
Yeah. I think I have a dollar in my wallet.
You take Venmo?
I do.
See, he does. I just don't have it. So, Jacob, why don't you Venmo him for the both of us, and I'll write you a check.
All right. That works.
So, anyways, Tom.
Yes.
We did, originally, before we got off, we're going to spend this segment talking a little bit about the one and only Tom Carroll, a.k.a. you. Now, people know you from the website, a little bit on, you've been on air occasionally, and if you actually... for those that don't know Tom Carroll's resume, he's been all over. He's hosted radio in St. Louis. He's worked for ESPN. Obviously very familiar with this market, from this market. But you had a piece recently on your own personal website, blog, that picked up huge national attention, picked up steam, and it was about your battle over the course of months, years, to lose weight. And you had a strategy. I'll be honest with you, Tom. When I read it, I didn't think there was a way to lose weight. And you had a stress. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah. So I lost 132 pounds over the course of a year eating Chick-fil-A every single day for lunch.
Now, stop the sentence right there. That in itself, I'd sit there like, what? Like, I've eaten Chick-fil-A a few times. I'm not losing weight eating that for lunch every day. So how did you make that happen?
So it was specifically the spicy Southwest salad. So I wasn't eating the chicken sandwich every day. I wasn't getting fries. I wasn't getting that large lemonade, which is delicious. I was going with the salad. And I was using that salad as sort of my main meal of the day. I would eat it for lunch. And once you put the dressing on it and the tortilla strips and the chili lime pepitas, it turns out to be about 1,200 calories or so. But it's a really good source of protein. And it's really low carb. So I'm eating that as sort of my main thing. And then you just fill in the gaps around it. And the weight just started coming off. And it was something that I felt like I could continue to stick to doing. And I had been a big guy my entire life. I still am a big guy. I'm 6'2". But it was something where I finally found a system that I could stick to and could help me keep the weight off, as opposed to losing 40 pounds here and there and then putting it back on and putting it back on and some. And at my heaviest, I was 360 pounds and I was having chest pain and I hadn't gone to the doctor in years. My blood pressure was out of control and I was a mess. And I finally just needed to have that come to Jesus moment and figure out something to do that was going to save my life. And it was trial and error. It was stop and go. I talk a lot about it in the essay. And eventually Chick-fil-A became the thing that I could stick to and became my guiding force towards losing all this weight and keeping it off. The big thing for me was once I lost all the weight, it was July of 2024. So last summer.
Pretty recently, yeah.
Yeah. And so I said to myself, oh, like I'm going to get this story out there. I think it's really cool. I think in about 8 months or so, I had lost 132 pounds. And then I said to myself, well, actually, Tom, maybe take a step back and don't do that because you've lost weight before and then you put it back on. So you get all the compliments from people and people all make you feel good. But then a year later, they're probably saying behind your back, like, oh, Tom, put the weight back on. So I said to myself, give yourself some time, show that you can really keep this off and stick to this plan, then go out and tell your story and see if it can help people. So once I hit the 1 year anniversary of having to go to the emergency room with chest pains, and I saw that the number on the scale was the same that it was in July, that's when I said, okay, you can figure out a way to tell this. So I wrote a long form essay. It's going to take you some time to read. If you want to read it, you can check it out. Chick-fil-A-tom.substack.com. And it's also posted on my socials. I have it pinned on my Twitter at ya boy TC Fresh, YABOI TC Fresh. And if you have the time to give it a read, takes about 20, 30 minutes to get through it. But it's been really cool to get the feedback that I've been getting from guys that have read it, who have said, hey, this has helped me go on my health journey, start up my diet, make the doctor's appointment that I've been putting off. That's been the coolest part of this whole thing. And that's what I was really going for, because I knew that there were a lot of guys like me that needed that extra push, that needed to hear that, like, hey, it's okay to like talk about this and deal with it. Because if you don't deal with it, serious things can happen and you don't want to go down that road. So I'm just so thankful that I found something that works for me, and I'm happy to keep doing it and keep telling the story.
It's an incredible story. And I have to ask, the Chick-fil-A salad is still a thing every day?
Every day. I ate one earlier today. I don't know. Jacob probably saw me mixing it earlier, brought it up here to eat while we were doing our show prep. But yeah, it's awesome, man. I can't stress enough. The spicy Southwest salad from Chick-fil-A is an elite salad. It is so freaking good.
And you mentioned that there's a lot of people that have come to you since and said, hey, this helped me get my health back on track or speak to a doctor. And I feel like a lot of times, and you know this, when people post stuff online, especially people in our jobs, usually a lot of negative reactions, a lot of trolling, all that. But it feels like this piece for you, it caused a lot of people to just kind of take a moment and reflect. And you've actually gotten, at least from what I've seen, and it sounds like from what you've mentioned, a lot of positive feedback on this piece, which has been great to see.
Yeah, it's a huge departure from what we normally get on social media, yeah. Right? So that's been cool. And especially in sports, like people are very quick to throw jabs and make personal attacks when you don't agree on things as trivial as sports. But when it comes to life stuff and health stuff, when you're willing to put yourself out there and talk about it, I've at least seen that people have been quick to say, that's awesome, man, and have been super supportive and have been quick to go ahead and take the story and use it to go and do what they want to do from a health perspective. So you mentioned it, the media coverage has been crazy. And you know, the fact that I work in sports media, it was really cool that the people in the industry that I know that follow me, that saw the story, they were willing to push it out. And that allowed it to get eyeballs that it normally wouldn't have. So a few local outlets picked up the story. NBC Providence did a little feature on me, which was cool. I'm from Rhode Island, so my hometown news station did a story on it. And then that actually led to NBC Boston picking up the story. And they made like a little TikTok version of the news package. And that has 1.3 million views on TikTok.
Yeah.
So I continue to get these people reaching out to me, people commenting on the blog, on Substack, you know, saying that it has inspired them and They ask me questions. Hey, you know, what were you eating outside of these meals? How did you make your dinners? All this stuff. What are you doing for workouts? So it's kind of opened up this can of worms. And quite honestly, like, it's something I'm thinking about, like, from a career standpoint. Like, is this something that I want to do additive to what I do in sports or instead of? Like, it's been by far and away the most rewarding thing in my life is sharing this story and then having people reach out about it. So I don't know. This might be the last sports show well, I ever do, John, and I go off and help people in the weight loss sector. I don't know. It really has been that powerful for me.
And I think one thing that stands out about this, too, is you're a younger guy. Like, I feel
I'm
like
32
a lot of,
years old.
Yeah. Right. When you hear these stories about people who made health changes and whatnot, a lot of times it's someone that's a little bit older, right? Maybe they've been smoking for 30 years and they stop smoking, or they've had a bad diet for 20 or 30 years and then they stop. But I think you being a younger guy also attracted more eyeballs to the story because, like, hey, this is someone that normally we don't think of as, like, oh, needing to make a major health change, someone who's in their late 20s, early 30s, but you did it and you shared it. And I think that probably attracted a lot of attention that maybe a story with someone who's a little bit older maybe wouldn't have attracted. So that was an interesting part of it for me, too.
You're 100% right. I think the age had something to do with it. I also really wanted to keep emphasizing the fact that, like, I'm not an expert. I'm not like this IG Instagram model dude that's going to throw up a ton of weight on the bench and be ripped. Like, I'm a normal guy. And I found something that me as a normal guy can do and set attainable goals for myself, things that I knew that I could accomplish that I wasn't going to get intimidated and stop doing after 3 or 4 days because I got hurt at the gym or because I was bored eating something every day. You know, I found a thing that I could focus on and get excited about every single day. And then once I lost the first 70 pounds or so, and I had a few doctor's appointments that made it clear that, like, yes, you're healthy enough to start working out. You don't have to worry about any sort of blockages or anything like that I was terrified about because of my chest pains. It turned out that I could find something at the gym that I could do on the treadmill that kept me interested and was something that was attainable every day. I keep going back to that word, attainable. And, you know, now I sit here X amount of months later and I've kept it off and I hope to continue keeping it off and want to keep it rolling. So thanks for asking about it and giving me time to talk about it.
Read it because it's well worth your time. It's just, you know, beyond the fact that we know Tom here, it's a great story in itself.
Really,
it's truly incredible. And Tom, we're going to still have a lot to get. I mean, think about all the stuff we've hit on in the show. Your incredible story.
I actually just told you I retired from sports.
Oh, that's true. So I guess the rest of the show
so
is
you've got the
solo.
Next 2 hours.
We do still have a lot to get. I mean, your incredible story we've already hit on, the Red Sox, right, Patriots. But we're going to go back to the Red Sox coming up next. We're going to talk Alex Bregman and Dylan Cease. We also have Lou Maloney joining us at 4:20. So we have all that and more coming up right after this break.